Hello and welcome to One Team in Wales, the podcast by Taff and Daff, where we look back at the last Glamorgan game, or games in this case. Now we're in Vitality Blast season, and we look forward to the next game as well. I'm Blake Bint, and with me, Taff and Daff writer Alid Hopkins, as ever, to look at what's been going on in Glamorgan's recent history, which is not so good for the men's side, Alid.
No, brought back down to earth a bit, wasn't it? After riding high from the last round of the championship and sitting third. Yeah, a bit of a humbling week for Glamorgan, and just frustrating, really. Two games that were winnable, and we'll come on to them in greater detail over the course of the next hour or so. But yeah, I got vibes from last year in the T20 Blast where there's very winnable games and Glamorgan seem to end up on the wrong side of them more often than not.
Yeah, I mean, I think with the new regionalisation as well, you're looking at Northants and Gloucestershire as two teams you really need to take advantage of when you've got, well, Somerset coming up now. There's going to be Warwickshire in there as well, and it's Worcestershire, isn't it? It's the other one.
Yeah, and
So
yeah.
there's just, you're looking at those, particularly how Gloucestershire started, obviously in Red Bull. We spoke to Dan Whiting last week, and he was not confident of their chances at all. Given their start in the Red Bull stuff. So to lose that, obviously in the manner it happened is devastating, and that could have easily gone the other way. But to lose those two games, you'd have thought the way Glamorgan started, that form would carry through, wouldn't you?
Yeah, and maybe it's a reminder of how different the two formats are. And you could argue that Glamorgan in the last 2 years have prioritized Red Bull cricket and rightfully so. But I think with as we kind of discussed before the T20 break started, the fact that the championship has gone the way it has perhaps offered the coaching staff a little bit more of a cushion in that and a little bit more freedom in the blast and a sort of an ability to really go for it in the white ball stuff. Not having to hold back players for the red ball stuff, maybe I don't know what their thinking is, but in my mind it just freed up the potential for them to really go for it in white ball cricket. And look, it hasn't been a disaster. There's certainly been positives, but there's a lot of issues to fix out of those two games as well.
Well, as ever, let's look at the scorecards. There's two games to go through, as I mentioned, one against Northants, one against Gloucestershire, as we are now into this thick and fast season period. So Northants batting first in the opener last Friday evening, scored 165 for 8. There was 4 wickets on debut for Fazlul Haq Farooqi. He took 4 for 34. Ned Leonard, 3 overs, 0 for 24. Tim van der Hoogte, 1 for 38 off 4. Mason Crane, 0 for 25 off 4. Really good controlling spell there. Dan Dathwaite, also 4 overs, 2 for 29. Bob really well. And Kellaway, just the 1 over, 0 for 11. And then in reply, Dan Dathwaite, the only one to stand out on the scorecard, really, batting at 7, 51 not out from 34 balls. And he was the one at the end that just couldn't quite get Glamorgan over the line, needing 6 off the last ball. There were also 20s for Smail, Crane and Kellaway, but a lot of single figures in that scorecard, which obviously isn't the best look. And then just very quickly, the Gloucestershire one, Glamorgan batting first this time, very similar game, scored 157, but they were in all sorts of trouble at 2 for 1, 15 for 2, 26 for 3, 44 for 4, 45 for 5. And then again, it was down to the number 7, who in this case was Henry Hearle, because Dan Dathwaite was injured. He got 46 to really get Glamorgan out of the hole. 25 for Chris Cook and 22 for Tim van der Hoogte, really supported. But again, the top order struggles, a concern. And then in reply with the ball, Farooqi finished with 2 for 38, which we'll mention. There's more specifics of that final over in a moment. Ben Kellaway, 1 for 29. Tim van der Gucht, 0 for 39. Ned Leonard, 2 for 36. And Mason Crane, again, really well bowled, 2 for 16 from his four. So just the five bowlers all bowled four each, and I suppose particularly the Gloucestershire game, it all came down to that final over when, well, I say it all came down to, I think Glamorgan did a lot wrong in the first innings as well, but when Gloucestershire need 15 off the final over and Winvis is at 99%, you'd expect Fazahak Faruqi, who'd bowled really well, four overs the day before, three overs on that evening, and then his last over just all went Pete Tong.
Darry Wall, I think it was, wasn't it, who smashed him into the grandstand off that first ball and really gave Gloucestershire life in that last over by doing that. And it was a nervous wait then, obviously. Yeah, going into that over, 15 needed with, you know, a tail ender and a lower middle order, I suppose, batter in. You have to favour Glamorgan with, you know, an internationally experienced death bowler with ball in hand. But it, I didn't think he bowled that over particularly badly. I think they did everything, apart from that first ball that got smashed. I think, you know, he did everything right in terms of trying to get Taylor on strike. And they did that for that last ball. Bowled a perfect Yorker the ball before for a dot, I believe, or they may have got through for one. I can't quite remember. And then, you know, outside edge and it runs down to third man, and it was a tough one to take, and you could tell Faruqi was incredibly disappointed and frustrated just by his body language after that, and you know the whole team as well. But I think Faruqi's done really, really well since he's come in. I've been really, really impressed with him. So I certainly don't lay the blame at his door for that last over. I think it was just circumstance and the way it went. I think you had a stat, didn't you, about Darry Wall and about his bat speed. I can't quite remember.
Yeah, it was, this was Dan, I think, said last week that Darry Wall has the fastest bat speed of anyone in the Gloucestershire squad that's hitting off a stationary tee, and that's done with Chris Dent's academy that he has, his coaching school. So, I mean, yeah, if that's not correct, then that's Dan Whiting. That's not on me. But yeah, I mean, it's impressive, and he had a really good knock on debut. Sorry, not on debut, in his second game in his Gloucestershire T20 career. But one person who did do really well on debut was Henry Hearle. And it does just feel like deja vu, like you said, from last season. And I said it just before we came on air, where you said about losing games that Glamorgan should win. And for me, it felt like last year, all the games were, bar the odd one where someone in the top order comes off, a lot of the time they were in a very precarious position. And it was, okay, Ace of Tribe batting six, Dan Douthwaite batting seven. You two need to have a match-winning partnership if we're going to get anywhere near. And thankfully, often they did. Whereas this time, you know, you can't rely on that every game. But number seven seems to be a blessed position for Glamorgan, because Douthwaite got runs there the day before, and then Hearle on Saturday night, 46 of his own. And it was a really mature knock, wasn't it, in front of the cameras as well?
Yeah, huge performance from Henry Hearle, and, you know, on debut as well. Not easy to come in and do that at that stage of the game. There must have been a lot of nerves, you know, family and friends in the crowd, as you said, on TV as well, in front of the cameras. Quite a big crowd there as well, local derby. All of the factors were against him. And he played like the top seven should have been. It wasn't an easy pitch. We saw that beforehand in the women's game. There wasn't a hell of a lot of pace in it. And you just had to kind of take your time. It wasn't going to be a huge total that they were going to post. It was never going to be a 200 pitch. You didn't have to go, you know, hell for leather early on. And I thought he just played his shots really well. He got himself in, knocked it about a little bit, and then took the boundaries when he was given to him. You know, when he got a few sort of in the slot balls, I suppose, in those sort of middle overs where, you know, you don't have the opening bowler, the power play bowler or the death bowler on. You've kind of got those guys who are filling the middle overs almost with bowling. That's when you really take advantage. And I think that's what he did well. He showed a good range of shots around the ground. But yeah, as you said, I've sort of had a few concerns with the consistency of the top seven in the championship as well. A lot of the games have come down to somebody coming in and being the saviour of the innings and really rescuing in the innings. And of course, in the championship, you've got the draw in play as well. So it's a lot easier to, if you do have somebody who comes in and really steadies the ship, to get results out of that. But in one day cricket, in white ball cricket, you obviously play in to win. And that's, I think, where Glamorgan have come unstuck in these two games, really, is, as you said, not really having anyone in that top five really fire and having to rely on guys down the order coming in.
Well, Richard Dawson thought Glamorgan were under par, despite Henry Hill's heroics, from 45 for 5 to get to 157 for 8. So they put up a bit of a fight. We can hear more from him now as well, talking about Henry Hill's knock and also a little bit about his disappointment with playing back-to-back games.
To get so close at the end and then not go over the line, especially after yesterday, it's a tough one to swallow. But I thought the way Hurley got us back into the game was a massive plus for us. I thought his innings was exceptional. Coming in under pressure as well, I don't know what it was.
45-5.
The way he played, decisions he made, how he handled the situation, I thought was exceptional. For him, that partnership with Cookie and then the partnership with Timmy as well to get us to a total that we almost defended was a great effort from him. No, we were under par. I mean, 3 down in the power play and 5 down for whatever you said it was, 40 yards. We never gave ourselves the opportunity to really push for the... What did we end up getting?
157.
Took him 180, 190, something like that. But we were never in a position to be able to put a foot down at the back end.
With that said then, on the flip side, you must be really happy with how it went with the ball.
Yeah, well, I mean, the power play, getting him 3 down early on. And then Mace threw those middle overs, I thought, bowled really well as well to really push the run rate back. And then, just couldn't quite get over the line.
Obviously missing Dan and Colin tonight. Mm-hmm. Just a couple of updates on those. And you've got a good 5-6 days now till some sets are hoping.
It's quite hard to give an update because we only got back home at 2:30, which is incredible, to then come and play however many hours later.
So I assume you're not a fan of that, first and foremost.
No. Start a tournament back-to-back when you're getting back at that time, and then you got a 5-6 day break, and Gloucester obviously played yesterday as well. It's like you say, Dan's got a bit of a niggle, Cole's got a niggle. It's very hard to manage that when you've got to get straight back on the park.
Well, there was Richard Dawson there talking to me on Saturday evening in the Cardiff darkness when the weather had dropped from when it was scorching earlier in the day. But we stuck around and we made sure we heard what Richard Dawson had to say. And it's fair to say he wasn't a happy man. To be honest, I'm on his side with this one. The squad got back, as you heard him say there, about 2:30 in the morning from Northampton. And then they were the only game on Saturday night. Gloucestershire had played the night before as well, playing at home, though, in Bristol. So to play in Cardiff at 7 p.m. the next day, when there's no other games going on, there's loads of fixtures happening the next day, or even on the bank holiday Monday, it's just, I don't get it at all. It's unfathomable. And I'm really with Richard Dawson on how disappointed he is, not only with the kind of getting back late and how do you recover from that, but he had two players get injured, Dan Dalthwaite and Colin Ingram, who were ruled out of Saturday. And he wasn't any the wiser to know whether they would be fit. And it was more a precautionary, don't take a risk, I think, which he said in his interview, they didn't have time to assess them.
We kind of came out of the ground, didn't we? And you don't want to make excuses because obviously there's a lot on the field that Glamorgan need to fix from these two games. And you know, Richard Dawson's under no illusions that that is the case, but it certainly doesn't help, as you mentioned, getting back at 2:30 in the morning to Cardiff. And then, you know, you think of, I think Richard Dawson himself lives in Bristol, doesn't he? So he's got to then drive back, you know, an hour or so, 40 minutes, depending on where he lives in Bristol, then again. And a lot of the players live in different parts of South Wales or whatever. So they've got potentially 45 minutes, an hour to get home from there. And they're getting in at 3 o'clock in the morning. And yeah, it didn't seem like the only thing I can potentially think the reason why they had to play on a Saturday is because there was that England women's development game on the Sunday that Beth Gammon played in, and to get that double header in on that weekend, maybe they had to play it on the Saturday. I don't know. That is me clutching at straws. It's obviously to do with the doubleheader, which is great. But to us from the outside looking in without that kind of information, there didn't seem to be a reason why that doubleheader couldn't have been played on the Sunday or even the Monday, as you said, on the bank holiday. So this is Sky, isn't it? It's Sky that's
going into this. Yeah, obviously, the game was on Sky, which again is great for the exposure, but you know, the players don't need the exposure anymore. Someone like Henry Hill, great, but there's no reason why that game couldn't have been on the Sunday afternoon, in my eyes.
Especially when there's England women's game on the same day and the Saturday, overshadowing it anyway, really. Like half the, you know, Sky would have had a kind of skeleton crew there at Savoy Gardens on Saturday night because most of the main producers and commentators would have been at the England game, right?
Yeah, absolutely. And before we come back to talk about Hurl and how Dawson was full of praise for him, there are concerns, as you said, with top seven. I mean, the Gloucestershire game in particular, the dismissals of Horton and Smale were just ugly. There's no better way to put it. They were horrible, horrible dismissals.
Particularly Will Smale trying to ramp off the first ball. I'm not 100% sure what he's doing there. And I even heard in the week, I was talking to some friends of mine who know some of the players, and apparently the Gloucestershire fielders before they had come out had been talking about Will Smale and his willingness to ramp the ball. And apparently Alex Horton had said to him before a ball was bowled, you know, that, have you heard that? They're chatting about you ramping. Just see if you're off here and just see where you are. And then he obviously ignores that and goes and gets bowled. So
and I get it. I get it in a way as well, because it's puzzling doing it first ball. And I get it, because if he, you know, if he ramps that first ball for six or a one bounce four, you go, oh, you know, wow, what a way to start, you know. But it's just when it goes wrong, it doesn't look good, does it?
No, if you've won your opening four or five games of a T20 blast and you have hit runs and you're enjoying yourself and you go into a game and you go, I'm going to try something different, fine. Maybe you give him that one. But when you've lost the night before, you're under pressure to win again. I know it's still early in the tournament, but you're under a lot of pressure to win. It's just not a smart choice to make, is it, off the first ball? I really like Will Smale, and I think he's a good player, and I think he's got a lot to give this side. But that was just not the shot to play in those circumstances. And as we've said, it just doesn't help that top order get a start from anywhere, really. You know, then you put Kieran Carlson under pressure to come out second ball when he's in at number three and try and manufacture something, which he wasn't really able to do. It just doesn't set you up well, and I just did not see the need for it at all.
Well, I think an issue lies as well in that there's not much to replace the top order, really. I think they've just got to stick with them. You've got Ingram to come back and Dalthwaite to come back, hopefully, but then that means one of the bowlers will have to be dropped, so it all depends whether they want to play McAndrew and Faruqi or if they want to play Ingram and one of them. And you know, Billy Root potentially could play, but I don't think Byron would play in the T20s. I don't think Callum Nichols is ready, and Jack Hope-Bell I don't think is ready either.
Try back next week, though.
Try back after the Lions, yeah. And you'd assume he'd open this year rather than bat six. But I don't want to dwell on that too long. I do want to move on, talk a little bit more about the youngsters, because Hurl, as we've mentioned, had a really good knock on Saturday, coming in off not very great T20 second 11 form or club form either, really, but you know, just goes to show that sometimes you have your day. And there is a lot of promising signs for youngsters at Glamorgan, particularly Harry Wallace, Mark Wallace's son, scored over 300 runs in the weekend, scoring 62 for Newport and then 153 not out for Glamorgan under 18s and then 99 not out for Glamorgan seconds, and he was one of five players in the Glamorgan under 18s academy set up to play in that second 11 game. Jacob Blades, another one, also hit 50 against a strong Somerset second 11 as well. So let's talk positives, Glamorgan. That's one of them.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think the approach that they've taken in letting so many of these young players get valuable game time in the second team, with, you know, with really experienced, some really experienced characters in there. You know, the likes of Billy Root, Eddie Byram's now dropped into the second team off his form. Jamie McElroy's played a lot in the second team. You know, there's really valuable experience in that team as well for the for those youngsters to learn from. And it seems to be working. You know, they're getting results, they're hitting runs, they're taking wickets. And, you know, I was listening to the Wisden podcast this week, and I think it was Nick Friend was talking about Glamorgan, and he was, and, you know, that was one of the things he was mentioning is the academy. I don't pay a lot of attention to other clubs' academies. Glamorgan's academy seems to be the kind of talk of the county circuit at the moment, certainly when it comes to academies. And Glamorgan really seems to be a kind of in vogue club at the moment, amongst, you know, the county circuit. There's a lot going well at the club, a lot of things being done right. And I think the academy and the pathway, and I include the UCCE in that, is one of those things. It's doing really, really well. And yeah, long may it continue. I think it's fantastic for those youngsters to be getting that experience. And I think it really shows, you know, from the under 18s to the second team, then to the first team, that if you're in form and you're playing well and you're confident, you'll get a chance. And I think that really, you know, that drives competition amongst the squad. It drives everyone to be better and perform to the best of their ability to keep their own place in their, whatever team they're fighting for a place in. And it pushes everyone to think that I can really get in and play at the next level, wherever that may be.
And we heard earlier this week that Tom Norton might be joining up with the England squad to bowl at the Test Batters, which has had mixed reception from what I've gathered from fans on social media when I posted it. Some are really happy for his development. Some kind of don't see it as a big deal because it's just going in as a net bowler. And others are worried he's going to get ruined or injured, which I think is also a fair point. So we'll wait to see how that unfolds next week. If he is down at Lord's, if we move on to Somerset, then, I mean, this is going to be an almighty tough game. Defending champions, 1-2 from two so far this year, without really breaking a sweat, Alid.
Yeah, and it's back-to-back games against them as well. It's
there's a bit of a break in between, isn't there? Yeah.
Well, so it does. Yeah, but in terms of, you know, there's not another winnable game, air quotes, between that. So if it all goes the way that I imagine the bookies are leaning towards, Glamorgan could be looking at four losses from four games. They need a big performance. And this, I've wrote about it in the preview piece this week. It does have an air of must win to it on Friday, even though it's only the third game in the competition. And yeah, as you said, it's going to be extremely tough against the reigning champions. As you said, two comfortable 7-wicket victories in those two games. James Rue is on fire again for them in this competition. I think he's hit 150 odd runs off the top of my head already. Overton and Jake Ball have taken 5 wickets each, you know, showing their experience. And there's likes of Tom Banton as well, who, you know, is just one of the best players in the country in this format.
And Will Smead as well.
Will Smead, yeah, has been for years. It's a real uphill challenge, but as I've kind of wrote about, not to give away the whole piece, Glamorgan have to show that kind of bounce back ability that they did going away from the Nottinghamshire Championship game and to the rest of that block. You know, they seem to learn lessons from that game. And came back and beat Somerset in the Championship, right? And frustrated Somerset. That was a really, really frustrating game for Somerset. So they've shown that they can, albeit it's a totally different format, they've shown that they can compete against this side and they can beat this side. In this format, it is a different story, yes. But I think they have to show that bounce back ability and they have to win at least one of these two games against Somerset.
Yeah, I think it's a completely fair point you make, actually, that, you know, they can beat this side because they did it in the championship, and I don't think either of us probably would have anticipated that, particularly not in the manner it came, with all the dramatics that came with it, which was obviously a great game, probably my favourite moment since reporting on Glamorgan. That game was, and also they absolutely smashed Somerset in my first game covering Glamorgan for the UCB 2 years ago, when Carlson hit 135 not out and Manus Labuschagne took 5 for 9, I think it was, to bowl Somerset out really cheaply. So it is possible, but yeah, the way Somerset started it, and players like Banton and Smead, they could have a power play of 100 for none. You know, it's that kind of, there's that kind of team, aren't they? And
yeah,
bowlers who just know what they're doing. Gregory, Overton, Ball, Sams as well, obviously the overseas. And then you've got Goldsworthy, who offers a bit of spin along with Lamanby, a bit of kind of left arm seam as well.
Kola Cadmore's out injured at the moment as well. I'm not sure if he's expected back in these next two games either, but if he is, that's another, you know, that's another huge player in their arsenal, isn't it?
Yeah, of course. And for Glamorgan as well, we're not sure what to expect from Douthwaite or Ingram. I think we're waiting on Glamorgan to put out a preview for that to know where they're going to be. But we're expecting Nathan McAndrew to be in, from conversations I've had within the club. It sounds like he's now just going to play in the Blast. Ryan Hadley's re-signed to play the two games in the Championship, which McAndrew was originally going to play. But I think that's still a really positive thing. It means he can give all, hopefully, for all 10 games, or if there's a balance, they see it with Faruqi and Ingram as well, to balance two overseas spots out of three players.
Just on Faruqi, I've just refreshed the Glam Instagram page. Faruqi has been recalled to Kabul by the Afghanistan Cricket Board, bringing an early end to his stint with the club.
Well, that's really disappointing to hear that.
Breaking news
in the moment. But yeah, well, it won't be breaking news when this podcast goes out tomorrow. But well, either way, it makes the overseas slots a lot easier to fill when Ingram returns to fitness, and they'll have McAndrew in there as well. In terms of any other changes, Aled, I'm not convinced by Tim van der Gugten personally in this format. I just don't think they need to force him when you've got people like Andy Gorvin, Jamie McElroy waiting in the wings. I really want to see Gorv have a go, actually.
Completely agree. The only thing I would say for keeping him in the side is if Douthwaite's still out, because I think we need some batting further down. I think he provides something with the bat. But I completely agree. If Douthwaite's and Ingram are both available, I'd definitely give Tim a rest. I think he's much more important to the Red Bull stuff as well. And obviously he's fit as a fiddle, but he's getting up there in age, and definitely needs to prioritising for Red Bull cricket, because he's been our best bowler in the Championship so far this season. And totally agree, I think somebody like Andy Gorvin and Ed Leonard, you know, who's done okay, are better options in this format.
Well, let's wrap up by talking about the women's side, who also started their T20 Blast campaign last Friday and then also played in part of that doubleheader on Saturday. They won both their games with really positive starts. Lauren Parfitt, half century in one game. Daisy Jeans, a big knock in the other. And I think it's just what we expected, isn't it, really, from them?
It is, yeah. Obviously, with Yorkshire moved up to Tier 1 now, they'll be potentially the favourites in this competition this season. And it was a really... I was there on Saturday for that game, and it was a really strong performance. They absolutely blew Derbyshire away, especially in the second innings with the ball. The spinning trio of Gemma Porter, Katie Cobb and Nicole Reid really really stifled the Derbyshire middle order, lower top order and middle order. And they just took wickets regularly. You know, it was a really, really impressive performance. They bowled to the conditions. And as you said, Daisy Jeans' knock was outstanding. She went in there, opened, wickets fell around her. She had to kind of steady the ship a little bit because there were a few wickets going down around her. But once she got into her flow, I was really impressed by the number of different shots she was playing. Quite often in the women's game, especially in Tier 2, I think to find boundaries, a lot of it can be quite leg side ish because you need to generate that power. But she played wonderfully on the offside as well. And it was great to see, you know, the range of shots that she had and ability to find the boundary at all corners of the ground. I was super, super impressed.
Yeah, and the depth in the squad is really impressive as well. Katie Cobb, Nicole Reed didn't play much of a part in the One Day Cup stuff at the start of the season. Often they were going with people like Poppy Walker and Eve Jackson, who played a couple, and now she's playing in the Blast as well. So really good to see those, and not just depending on the loanees, which we thought they would play a big part in this season. And actually they are playing a part. They are definitely being accompanied by seniority and youth as well.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, we mentioned Eve Jackson there, and she had an amazing season last season, obviously as a 17-year-old last season, still in school, I think. She finished school now, and as an 18-year-old, she's really one of those players that I think they really want to push through in this team. She's already come through that pathway, and she's emerged as kind of the leader of that pathway, or the best of that crop, if you like. And she's really, you know, she's taken a chance. You've seen it in the past couple of games now with the development side. She's not just a bowler, she's hitting runs with the bat as well. She's developing her batting. It goes same as the men's side. The club are really nailing the kind of development of youngsters, not just in the men's team, but in the women's team as well. And that pathway with Wiltshire and Gloucestershire as well is crucial for the women's team. We've seen so many players come from those sort of regions. It long may continue. They're looking really, really good.
Just finally on that point, as we're recording this, Glamorgan's Academy are playing against Vipers Academy right now, and they look like they could just steer themselves to victory. It's been a thriller in a three-day game. Glamorgan currently need 32 with 3 wickets in hand. So by the time this goes out, you will know the result. But Eve Jackson scored 100 in that as well. So that really does show her all-round ability, where she's taking a lot more of a role with the ball in the senior side. And then in the academy, she's a genuine all-rounder, along with some of the Gloucestershire and Wiltshire players having a really good impact as well, which is great to see with those Tier 1 contracts lurking next year. But that's all for this week. And with Somerset coming up when this comes out today, we'll see how that fares. And then Somerset again next week. So we'll have another podcast for you, along with plenty of reports and reaction on Taff and Daff's site ahead of that one next Thursday. But for now, thank you very much for listening. Thank you to Alan for joining me, and goodbye.